This is a production of Cornell University.
So we've got about 20 participants. I believe we have quorum right now. So I'm going to go ahead and call this meeting to order. I'm just checking to see if Michelle Oparco is here to take roll call. See her, so I'll just pull up a list and then I'll just do roll call. So Brian Goodell, I see him here. Michelle Loporco.
I am here.
Hi, Brian. Michelle, do you want to do roll call?
Sure.
Thank you.
Let's see. Let me get this open here and go through. All right. Susan Berry is here. Joseph. I don't see Joseph. Marin is here. Jackie.
I'm here.
Thank you. Hey is here. Looks like Reginald is in the waiting room. I'll admit him. Jamie is here. Yeah. Brenda Fisher. And Brandon is here. Brian is here. Andrea is here.
I'm here.
And Deborah Howell. Okay, Emily is here. Rigel is unable to make it. He has a training. I'm here. Christine is here. Virginia McCauley. Okay, Jen Michael is here.
I'm here, yep.
Ashley Miller, I believe, is here. Or she may have had another meeting to go to, I think, after this. Ellen is here. Mary is here. Michelle is here. Let's see, is Nasser here? No. Kate is here, I believe. I think I saw Kate. Supron. Yep. Kit.
I'm here.
And let's see. Laura Taylor.
Here.
Catlin. Wilcox. Jessica Townley.
Here.
Jessica Withers is here. And Lisa Zacharias, I believe, is also here. Yep.
Here.
Great. We have quorum.
Thank you. So let's move on to the approval of minutes from January 6, 2021. Do I have a motion to approve those minutes? Michelle has her hand raised. I'll second it. Is there any dissent? Seeing none. The minutes from January 6th are approved. Let's move on to business of the day. So I wanted to bring forward this resolution for discussion. I'm going to send the floor over to Jamie, who worked on this resolution. Jamie?
Yep. So I put together this resolution after some information came to light about the harassment that the student assembly leaders were facing. We passed it through the executive committee, and it's been up in the box. I hope everyone's had a chance to read it. You know, we tried to keep it to the issues that they were facing that we felt were very troubling, and not wade into the issues of the resolutions that they were working on. So that was intentional. I think it passed through the executive committee unanimously, and I've sponsored it for a general EA membership vote today.
Thank you. So I'm going to open up the floor for discussion. We've introduced this resolution, and then we can bring it up after discussion closes under new business for a vote. So I'm going to open up the floor now for any questions or comments that anybody has in regards to this resolution. Please raise your hand. I noticed that Brandon's hand is raised. Brandon?
Thank you, Hey, and Jamie, thank you so much for putting this resolution together. I think it's very important to show the support to the student assembly in light of the circumstances. I think I mentioned that I kind of watched a lot of this unravel and was just extraordinarily disappointed and upset by the actions of people in regard to this. One recommendation I might suggest would be on lines 28 and 29. In that particular line, it speaks specifically to three staff members. I might recommend that we change that to just kind of note that there were multiple members, because while I was copied on an email that included specific members, I know that the harassment wasn't limited to these three student assembly members. So just acknowledging that it was multiple members of the student assembly, and that I might make note, and then I had sort of a phrasing of the last piece that I thought I might recommend an adjustment to, not specifically to how it's currently phrased, and I'll pull up what it is now and then what I had thought. Whereas you said that, you know, bombarded with overwhelming influx and from slurs from right-wing accounts, I might suggest to just kind of acknowledge that these were violent, sexist, and racist comments, and that they were publishing of the names and photos on prominent social media accounts, as well as articles were sent with sources to with intentionally edited transcripts and quotes to fabricate false narratives. So that was sort of framed up kind of a lot of the aspect that I thought might be a good adjustment for that particular phrasing.
Thank you, Brandon. Are there any other comments, suggestions, questions about this resolution? So it sounds like there's some changes maybe that Brandon and Jamie can sort of work on offline. We can bring this back onto the floor in open discussion later for a vote if people feel comfortable with that. But it sounds like there's no additional discussion on this resolution, and we can move on to the other business of the day, and we'll come back to this under new business. So a staff forum update. So I just very quickly want to recap some of the items that we've worked on in the wellness, in the welfare committee. We're working on a civil discourse panel discussion. Right now we've been in touch with different resources across campus to put together this panel and try to figure out who would be the best individuals to come together for this. So right now it's still a work in progress. And we are also working on a finance, employee assembly finance staff forum. So that would bring together Paul Streeter and Joanna DiStefano to talk about the current financial state of affairs. I think that that'll be a pretty pertinent one as we get into budgeting season in February, March, as we prepare for a new fiscal year. So we're still waiting to hear back from them to see when we can put some time on their calendar. So those are the two that are on the horizon that we're working on. If there are any other panel discussions or staff forums, you know, you would like us to sort of work on, then please let me know. So it looks like Ellen's hand is raised. Ellen?
Hi, I'm sorry. Hey, can you just repeat what the first one of those two forms was? You said it very fast.
Sure, sorry. I do speak really fast. So let me know if I've maybe spoken a little bit too quickly. I'm happy to to repeat myself. So the first one was the civil discourse panel discussion. So far, I believe Reginald White, who I believe logged on, has volunteered to participate. We've been in touch with Angela Winfield, and you know, some additional names have been thrown out, like Anthony Siss, maybe Avery August, maybe some faculty members. I think it'd be really helpful to get people from sort of different expertises. If we can get some faculty members, maybe from law, to participate, I think that'd be really helpful as well. So far, we're still sort of working on the details of who would be involved there. So hopefully we'll get a pretty good group prepared for this panel discussion. I hope that helps. Are there any other questions about the civil discourse panel discussion? All right, seeing none, let's move on to the retreat update. So I've sent out a lot of emails about the retreat coming up this Friday. I'm sorry if I've inundated your mailboxes, but basically the format will be, we're gonna have 45 minutes with Mary Opperman in the beginning. She'll probably do a very short, you know, it's not even a presentation. She just kind of speaks for maybe 10, 15 minutes. And then we open it up for questions. And this is really a great opportunity to engage with Mary, especially as, you know, we have this agenda for our retreat to sort of work through the priorities poll. You know, as you read these reports, you look at the feedback, I think it's a good opportunity to think about what are some things that we can do. Maybe you have some questions surrounding, you know, what HR is already doing, or questions about maybe some things your committee wants to do and you want to get our honest feedback. I think it's a really great time to have that conversation and really get at a very high level, you know, what work is already being accomplished or being worked on. And then, you know, what are the thoughts and opinions on some of the things that we're working on? So I really encourage you all to think about that 45 minutes, think about the questions you want to ask Mary, the conversations you want to have with her. Because if we don't use up the full 45 minutes, she could just leave early. And so let's do our best to kind of make the most of her time. So 45 minutes with Mary asking questions, and then we're going to have a period of time where we're going to talk about each of these priorities and get the group's feedback on them. And I'm hoping that, you know, there's so little time for us sometimes to talk about issues. We have all these agendas, resolutions, updates that we're working on. So I think it's a really good time to talk about, you know, the staff feedback, talk about, you know, what each of our opinions are on these issues and how we can move forward. Maybe there's information we all can share amongst each other. I find myself even within each of these different committees learning so many different things from people using, you know, all the collective information that we're gathering through all these different voices. So I'm hoping we can come together, talk about each of these priorities, talk about the feedback, and then after talking about these priorities, go into these breakout sessions. So I've created these assignments. I know a lot of people have different committees, but really in hopes of having a good grouping of maybe 7-8 individuals on each of these committees, talk about potential solutions, and then we'll come back together and we'll talk about them after these breakout sessions. So I'm hoping that's the general, agenda for the retreat. And if there's a possibility, I know Nasser is the chair of the elections committee, to kind of talk about elections. If, maybe we don't have enough time for that, or maybe there isn't anything prepared, then we might skip over that part. So that's sort of how I see the retreat going. Does anybody have any questions or comments about the retreats or the reports? There are a lot of reports. Each priority has its own report along with the backup. The backup will include all the feedback for anybody who selected that priority as the number one priority, but also feedback from anybody that's just mentioned it. So you might see if somebody has chosen transportation as their number one priority, that the feedback will include things on welfare or something that has to do with policy, not related to transportation. That's kind of why it's there. Just that you can kind of see for the people who chose that priority, what that feedback was, because it's not always going to be related to the priority, but I wanted you to kind of get a sense of where everybody was. All of the feedback is available in the box. So unedited, just all 298 comments are available for you to read if you're so inclined. But I think in order to make the most of your time to just read your committee report and the priority related to that committee, I think would be most helpful. I wanna make sure that you read at least one so you can kind of get a sense of the feedback. And then you really have a little bit more to kind of think about it and digest. So that's sort of how these reports were formed and what I'm really hoping we can get out of it. Really, it's just a starting point. It's a place for you to kind of be able to see what the staff feedback is and be able to have productive conversation out of that. Maybe you don't agree with the feedback. Maybe you have some other opinions about it, but I think it's important to kind of see what the staff broadly are saying. So that's sort of an explanation, just a quick discussion on the retreat. Does anybody have any questions for me or any feedback about it? Gina?
Excuse me, hey, just logistically, I was in the box looking for these so that I could point people to them. Where are the
reports?
Yes, where are the reports?
Yeah, let me, I just sent an email this morning and it was included in that, so.
In the agenda that was mailed out, there's a link to the retreat materials, and I think that I can delete that other. I created a folder for the stuff that Hey shared, but I can delete that folder if it's
confused. I'm just looking if I went into Box trying to find it without direct links.
I just inserted a link.
Retreat discussion is the main folder, and then retreat discussion, and then priorities poll. And I'll just delete this extra folder that has nothing in it that I created.
All the feedback is available in the priorities poll spreadsheet. And then each of the Word documents has, the report by committee by priority. So feel free to read as many as you want, but try to read at least one. And that would be the one related to your breakout room assignment. Any other comments, questions? If you want to change committee breakout room assignments, feel free to get in touch with Wendy and she'll, sort of assign you based on the spreadsheet and then whatever feedback you have. So if there are no other questions or comments about the retreat, let's get into committee reports. Let's start with Michelle Loparco.
Okay, so the last meeting of the EA Executive Committee was on January 28th. We discussed the agenda for the retreat. We approved the EA meeting agenda for today. We discussed the EA senior leader interviews, and we're hoping that Christine from the Welfare Committee would be able to give us an update on whether or not we're still gonna be pursuing this initiative. We talked a little bit about the George Peter Award and some follow-up with Gina in regards to where to go next with that. And then we had a discussion about the Election Committee and next steps for that. And Hey was going to connect with Nasser and Gina on when to start rollout of the upcoming election. So, and that is all we discussed.
Questions, comments? Looking for some hands. Seeing none, let's move on to Ellen Miller with the Communications and Awards Committee report.
Hello, everyone. We met yesterday. We had a very robust conversation and we discussed briefly the January EA Voice newsletter that had some pretty positive reviews. And the newsletter was pretty jam-packed. So now we're trying to think of how we can meet that for going forward for our next newsletter. So so we were talking a little bit about our February newsletter content, and we are aiming for February 15th as the distribution date. And We are planning to do a feature on the student and campus life with the move-in process and the employees that are involved in that and essential workers that are on campus and dining and other areas of student and campus life. And we'll do a spotlight on Brandon Fortenberry as the representative for that division. And we hope to include some information also about their Cornell Dining's recognition program. They have a Big Apples recognition program where anyone who uses the dining services can nominate any dining employee for this award. And it's just a nice little piece of recognition that they gave within the unit. Then we were talking about some other ideas for February and kind of fell short. So if anyone has any content that they would like us to include in the February newsletter, please reach out to me. I'm actively seeking that information. And then we have a couple of things on horizon for March. We were talking about the possibility of a tech campus focus, maybe March or maybe further down the line. And some further discussion on the education benefits that we presented in January, particularly related to CLASP and their role at the university and how we can support them as the, as an assembly and the employee connection. So those are our, that's the newsletter update for now. And again, please reach out to me if you have any content you'd like us to include. Then we moved on to discussing awards and recognition. We have our George Peter Award has been kind of revised and revamped, and it's on hold with the Office of Assemblies, and we're just waiting for some feedback, and then we'll try to get that rolling with a timeline and get on that. And we've started to shift our focus onto what is formerly been known as the Opperman Award. And so the George Peter Award is for achievement, and the Opperman Award is for advocacy. So it would highlight a employee that shows that they are an advocate for other employees on campus. And we're going to start tackling that, revising the rubrics for it, and try to get that up and running. And under new business, we did discuss the priority poll results for our committee, which did center around recognition. So we talked a lot about the employee appreciation portal and how we can better utilize that as an assembly, and how we can also kind of get the message out to employees and supervisors like to utilize this tool. And we also were brainstorming some other ideas and things that we can do to kind of get recognition of employees back on the forefront. So we'll be continuing that discussion in this Friday's retreat. And that's kind of where we are with communications, outreach, and recognition for right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen. I think, you know, having reviewed all of the priorities poll results, a lot of people were saying the morale is kind of low. We're feeling a little defeated. Like, now is a great time to recognize staff for all the great work they've done, especially our essential and frontline workers. I think there's a great opportunity there. So thank you for discussing that. And I'm looking forward to hearing more about it during the retreat. Are there any questions or comments for Ellen on the Communications and Award Committee? Looking for any hands raised physically or through the technology here. Seeing none, let's move on to the Education Committee. Jessica Withers.
Hi, so yes, we met the day before the panel on the staff education benefits. So one, we had the panel on the staff education benefits, which was packed full of information. So if anyone, if constituents ask, or if you yourself are interested, I would definitely watch the recording if you weren't able to attend. There was just a lot of information. And I do specifically want to thank Michelle Aparco for her work on the Q&A. For the first time ever, I tried having the Q&A and the chat and everything open, and it was overwhelming. So I don't know how she does it when she manages the Q&A, but she does a fantastic job. Thank you, Michelle. So the other thing we worked on during our meeting was the piece that Ellen just referenced. We had a profile of staff education benefits and how they are seen by how staff feel about them. But we also had a quote. So we had a quote from Mary Newhart about using staff education benefits, and then a quote from Brian that reflected the supervisor's point of view. And it was quite a long piece. So thank you to Ellen for including the whole thing. And that's what we spent most of our meeting on that day. And I think that's all I have to share. We did get some really good feedback. Hey got some, and it sounds like Ellen's heard some too. We have got really good feedback about the panel. So thank you again to everyone for supporting that.
Thank you. Ellen, I see your hand is raised.
Yeah, I wanted to ask if we know how many people were in attendance at that education forum. Did we get a number on that?
I'm curious. I do have it written down somewhere.
Yeah, I also had it written down. I think it was like upwards of 300.
I was thinking around 400 as well.
That's great. Excellent.
Up in my head.
Oh, here it is. 436 people attended the employee education panel based on just me looking at the number on the bottom.
Yeah, I got a lot of requests after the fact for the link. So I sent that to a bunch of people so that they could view it afterwards. There was a lot of interest in it. So thank you for doing that, Jessica. It was really, really well received.
Yeah, thank you, Jessica. I agree. There were so many comments that I had received, like I received comments on LinkedIn through email. A lot of people were really glad that we provided this opportunity to learn about all these different resources. And, you know, from what we heard in the priority school feedback, people wanted one place to learn about all this. So I'm really glad we're able to provide this. And we have it online and people can watch it later, which I think a lot of people probably would participate in. I don't know what the numbers are for that, but it'd be kind of nice to know. So. Thank you. Any other comments or feedback for Jessica? Seeing none, let's move on to the next committee. We've got the Welfare Committee with Christine Mahoney.
Hello. Brian and I just hosted, we just had a meeting right before this. We hosted Linda Kroll Howell, and she gave a presentation to our two committees, the Benefits and Policy and the Welfare Committee, on the Belonging at Cornell survey. And then a brief update on where HR thinking is right now on a long-term work from home kind of transition to a hybrid model. Really great presentation. That's pretty much all I have as an update. I'm curious about the comments Michelle just made about the interviews. Given our last meeting and discussion, I was not clear that that was with our committee. So I'd like to follow up with you directly on to try to reconcile my understanding on that.
Sounds good. So we'll discuss that offline. Any questions or comments for Christy and the Welfare Committee? All right, seeing none, let's move on to the Benefits and Policy Committee with Brian Goodell.
Hi, everyone. So we did meet the last time on the 19th of January. We had a meeting and we didn't do a presentation because a meeting got canceled the last time. So real quick, it was just it was a good meeting, a lot of production. We met and discussed the follow-up on the resolution EAR5, thank you administration, and pretty simply put, we dumped it and it's gone. And we also talked about correspondence we received about the performance dialogue process, and we went into lengthy conversations about that. We talked about the correspondence received about the vaccine and talked a little bit about that. I don't know if you want to add on to that, hey, but it was pretty much staff saying that the essential workers should be in the 1A and 1B group, and that wasn't a decision that Cornell was making, but we could advocate, and many have advocated that they should have been included or should be included in that group, and recommendations from that. We also brought up some new issues as well. We also tagged along with the welfare committee and today to talk to get a presentation on the belonging at Cornell data. With the performance dialogues, there was a lot of discussion, and I have a meeting actually tomorrow with Tanya Grove to talk about any new stuff with the PDs and things that the changes that are forthcoming, and to find out if there was any flexibility given or a directive given for flexibility during COVID times with the PD process. So those are questions that we had, and she might be able to answer. And so that, I think I about covered it. Please, committee members, if there's anything I missed, please add on. Thank you, Christine, for hosting and helping host the Belonging at Cornell. That was very informative. It was a great meeting. I got a lot of information, and I'm looking forward to her coming back. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Yeah, I believe in a couple of weeks ago when the rollout for 1B included faculty members that would be doing in-person teaching, there was this exclusion of staff and like frontline workers at Cornell, and we had gotten a lot of feedback. But as Brian mentioned, you know, we don't control what the state is going to, you know, put in their list of who's going to be able to qualify for a vaccine. And even now there is a shortage of vaccines, but Mary did mention that she was also surprised, as a lot of us were, that, you know, some of our essential workers and people doing the frontline work were not included. I believe in P12 for schools, all teachers, staff, paraprofessionals, support staff, bus drivers, they were all included in, you know, that vaccination plan. But for universities, it looked like only faculty members doing in-person teaching were included. And so I know that leaders were in active conversations with people in Albany to kind of get, you know, university staff sort of treated similar to how P12 are treated, so that we could try to get more coverage. So I didn't hear anything else about it, but it did sound like senior leadership was aware of this issue, and there were active conversations happening. So that's what I had heard, and that was the information I shared with those that had asked.
I almost forgot under new business, Michelle Pollack brought up about what it's going to look like when we come out of our virtual worlds and actually re-enter campus, and how that's going to be. And there was some discussion on that as well. Mary Opperman mentioned that too, when we reactivate and we're pulled back to campus, what that's going to look like. And I think there's some concerns about that too, with and that's promising with the vaccine and this stuff. I think that's promising. So we'll see. There's going to be more talk around that, I believe.
Thanks, Brian. Any questions?
I just echo what you said. This is Reginald. Around the vaccine, I mean, the big issue right now is not, you know, what the categories are. The big issue is actually getting vaccines. So there are a number of people who are on the list officially, but there's not enough vaccine in Tompkins County to even fulfill the demand that's already there.
Thank you, Reginald. Any other comments, feedback on this? Seeing none. I don't see that Nasser is here for an update on the elections committee. Is there anybody else on the elections committee that would want to give an update? I don't know if y'all have met. Okay, Ellen?
Just popping to say that we have not met.
Thank you. So... let's move on to new business. So we can, at this point, have open discussions, so we can bring back the resolution that Jamie had introduced, and we can vote on it, assuming we're going to vote on, you know, this revised resolution with those changes that Brandon made. We can do that. We can continue discussion on it. So I leave it up to you if you all want to make a motion on the resolution. Okay, Brian?
So I sent this to Jamie in an email, but in the resolution itself, in line 29, it quotes about, it talks about, I wrote to him, I was wondering if we could change the wording there to something different so we're not marginalizing right-wing accounts or groups. Not all white right-wing groups are bad, and maybe changing it to a political extreme group or some other wording that isn't pushing off the right wing people. You know, I know that it was just a different wording, I guess. It just feels uncomfortable when you say a right wing group. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, so I see that Brandon's hand was raised and Jamie's hand was raised. So I'm going to allow Brandon to speak, then Jamie.
I'll let Jamie respond.
Sure, Jamie.
Brian and Brandon, I definitely take what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. The wording that was used there, it's in quotes, and it comes from the Cornell Sun article that this was brought from. And so to me, like, by having it there as a quote from the article, it's less of us putting our fingers on the scale in one way or the other, and changing that wording and making it sort of ambiguous as to where this was coming from, or watering that down, I think would do a disservice to the students that suffered this harassment. So you absolutely are welcome to put that forward as a amendment to the motion, but I would not support that change at this time.
Yeah.
Thanks for explaining. I wasn't aware that that came from the article. Thank you.
Brandon, then Claire.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that I think that I understand that this coming from the Sun in regards to the quote for the article. I just, had noted that I think that it provides it politicizes the comments, and the comments weren't necessarily political, but were in fact, comments that were racist, misogynist, and sexist, that targeted members of the student assembly in that regard. So I don't know that there's necessarily need for politicizing that particular aspect of it. And I understand where the Sun is coming from in making that comment. But I think that, what I had put there as a recommendation of the things that were done, I would think would cover that. And I agree, I understand the idea not to try to make the words come from specifically us about what it was, but we're putting this resolution forward. We're, as the employee assembly, making a statement about our perception, our feelings about that. And I think that it could be better said than it was in the article in the Sun. Thank you.
Thank you, Brandon. Claire, I see your hand was raised, and then we're going to circle back with Jamie. Claire?
I just wanted to say, as representative of the student assembly, I'm glad this resolution is being presented. And I agree with the edits that Brandon proposed, especially since a lot of the members did receive sexist comments, as well as giving more context as to the situation. So I approve.
Thank you, Claire. Jamie?
I would be very open to adding the context. I just wouldn't want to, I would be very open to adding the context of the racist and sexist attacks. But as far as the other changing of it, it's in the whereas statement, not the be it resolved statement. So this is more of a presentation of facts of what we have before us. And we could add another whereas statement or modify the other whereas statement to include the sexist and racist messaging in there. Otherwise, I think we would just scrap it altogether if we're not gonna quote from the Sun.
Okay, thank you for that, Jamie. So it sounds like there is some agreeance that we should include the commentary that Brandon had mentioned in regards to the racist and sexist remarks. And I think what is in question now is whether or not we want to include this quote in regards to the right-wing slurs from right-wing accounts. So Ellen, I see your hand is raised.
Brandon had his hand raised also, but I didn't know if that
was before. Oh, sorry, I wasn't sure if that was from before.
Go ahead, Ellen, I'll go after you.
Okay. Yeah, no, I just wanted to say in light of the comments and discussion that, I mean, I don't want to cut it off, but I would like to move that it be tabled to the next meeting and to continue the discussion offline if we're not all in agreement, in a, you know, agreements to be able to vote today. So that, I guess, is a motion. I move to table this discussion and bring it offline. Is that a thing I could say? Yes.
Thank you. So that is a motion. Is there a second for that motion? Or does somebody want to continue the discussions? I see that Brandon's hand is raised. So so with the motion to, in this case, table this discussion, move it offline, and continue working on this resolution, do I get a second? So I see Brian's hand is raised. Is there any dissent?
So yeah, I would dissent. I think from the timing of this that it can be good. We could resolve this in this meeting here. I think it's important to get this out. Waiting another couple of weeks, this happened some time ago. I would say that we should look to try to resolve this, and perhaps one methodology we could look at is instead of tabling it to be brought up at the next assembly meeting, to be able to perhaps Jamie to receive some feedback and be able to send a revision out that could be voted on via email. I just worry that waiting another couple of weeks for our next meeting, it just continues to delay our response, and that I think it's important to provide this this message and importance.
Thank you, Brandon. I do agree with you. You know, sometimes we have these resolutions and there's this moment to kind of address this issue. And if we continue to table it, we might sort of miss this window of opportunity to say the students are back, we're making the statement addressing this issue, and this is the way we're going to start off the semester. I think that there's some value in that. So it sounds like there is a motion maybe to maybe table this for now, but maybe bring it to an online vote after some revisions have been made.
Yeah, so I think we had the motion to table, which I think we would have to resolve whether or not that motion would pass. And look, Karen's got her hand up there.
Yeah, Michelle.
Yeah. So I'm in agreement with Brandon. I think that we can hash out this line 28, 29. We discussed this in the executive committee, and we discussed keeping it as a quote, but I'm absolutely amenable to Brandon's changes if we can get consensus.
Okay, thank you. Mary, I see your hand is raised.
Yeah, I'm going to echo what Michelle said, and Brian. I do feel a little uncomfortable, even though it's in quotes, saying the right wing. I think, even though that's very true and it came from the sun, does sort of politicize it in a way that I'm not comfortable with. And I do like Brandon's changes. Okay. So I would be in favor of substituting Brandon's changes for that quote.
So this is a motion to replace line 28, 29 with the comments mentioned by Brandon. That is the motion. Yes. Is there a second for that motion? Michelle has seconded. Is there any dissent? Is there any
I put the verbiage that I put in the chat.
Okay. Mary, I see your hand is raised. Is this dissent or is this feedback you'd want to provide?
No, it's me trying to figure out how to put my hand down. Zoom has changed.
Okay, so it sounds like we're going to replace line 28, 29 with the language provided in the chat by Brendan. The recommended change is to change it to whereas multiple members of the student assembly received an influx of violent, sexist and racist comments, including the publishing of student names and photos on prominent social media accounts, as well as articles sent to news sources with intentional edited transcripts and quotes that fabricate false narratives. So
I don't want to be parliamentarian or anything, but so we're going to need to, I will remove my second, but I don't remember who put the amendment forward to table it. Can we withdraw that?
Okay. Motion to withdraw the tabling.
So we can finish this?
Actually, okay. Hey, I think if you just vote up or down the tabling of it, and then you can take up amendments. Because there is a motion on the floor.
So we'll vote to table it now. Can you, Gina, did we figure out how to do the vote now that we don't have like the thumbs up?
Yes, actually the recommendation is to just do it as we would have in a meeting space. Everybody just raise your actual hand and then either one of your designees, maybe Rigel as the parliamentarian or Michelle, or we can help as well, just do an actual physical count.
Rigel, the parliamentarian, has a training, so he is not here. So can everybody turn their screen, their videos on so that we can take an actual physical vote, similar to how we would do if we were in person. So first the vote is to table this. So who wants to vote to table this? Please raise your hand. I'm looking through all the screens. So I see Michelle's hand is raised to table.
I withdraw that.
Okay, sorry. So I see zero hands to table. Oh, wait, Kit, is your hand raised to table?
I think yes, yeah.
Okay, so there's one vote to table this. So we're going to now vote to not table this. So if you do not want to table this, please raise your hand. Kit, Kit, your hand is still raised. So I'm just counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27. I think we have the majority have agreed to not table this. So now let's move into an actual vote of the resolution with the amendment on line 28, 29. So right now, if you want to say, yes, I approve of this resolution with this amendment, please raise your hand. Yes. So I'm just gonna read this out loud. Hey, yes. Brendan, yes. Mary, yes. Michelle and Kit, yes. Jamie, yes. Kate Supron. Andrea Mott, Hayne Lamont, Jessica Withers, yes, Jessica Townley, Jackie Creakey, Ashley Miller, Christy Mahoney, Marin, Emily, Susan, Laura Taylor, I believe Susan Berry. I think I've captured everybody for the yeses, and then the noes. So please lower your hands and then raise your hand if you want to vote no for this resolution with the amendment. So I'm just gonna keep my eyes peeled.
Hey, this is just for the amendments, not the resolution with the amendments.
Okay, I see Brian's hand is raised for no.
Oh, no, sorry.
Okay, then I don't see any hands raised for no. So again, this was just for the amendment. And now, Gina, we're voting on the actual resolution. There you go. So we have voted to not table this. We've voted to approve of the amendment, and now we are finally approving of the resolution. Thanks, Gina. So please raise your hand to vote yes on the actual resolution. So please raise your hand again to vote yes on the resolution. I am seeing everybody's hands raised. I don't see, so I believe it's pretty unanimous that we're voting yes on this. Please lower your hands and raise your hand if it's a no. Kate, are you a no?
No, I'm just reacting slowly.
Oh, okay, all right. Just then, making sure. So yeah, I see zero. No. Oh wait, Ellen, is your hand raised for no?
Sorry, I also have a yes vote and I'm delayed reaction. This voting thing is actually like blowing my mind and making me like go crazy, sorry to say.
That's okay. So I think unanimously we voted yes.
You need to call for abstentions. Sorry.
Oh, are there any abstentions? I believe there is one online abstention, and that is from Joe Canella, who did not have a chance to review the resolution, but let me know that he abstains from the vote. So there is one abstention. Okay. So with the majority vote, this resolution does pass. I think, Gina, can you let me know if this is R6 or are we doing resolutions by the ones that have been approved? So the number would be different.
I think it's R6, but I'll take a look.
Okay.
It should be R5 because if it's by approved resolutions, then it's R5.
Yeah, because the last one didn't go through.
It should never have had a number attached to it in the first place. Sorry, because resolutions are only get a number when they're actually approved. Correct?
No, resolutions get a number when they are brought before the assembly. There's lots of different ways for a resolution to be dispensed. And when it's on an agenda, it needs a number. So it has nothing to do with the approval of it. It really is when it's introduced to the assembly.
Oh, so this would be R6 then, yeah. So
then it would be R6. Okay, there was-
Thanks. Okay, so we'll make the adjustment and then the edit. And then please share that with me, Jamie. And then I will bring it forward to the Office of the President for approval. But thank you all for working on this and talking about it. I know it does take some time and this process is very dynamic and it's constantly changing. So even this voting process was different just a couple of meetings ago and we've updated the software. We can't do what we were doing before. So it's all very dynamic and it's changing all the time. So it is 107. It sounded like there were other items that people wanted to bring to the floor for discussion. I want to see any hands raised for anything you want to bring to the floor. If you want to discuss anything else right now, we're in new business open discussion, so we can discuss whatever you would like. Did anybody want to talk about inclement weather? Did anybody want to talk about any other issues? I'm looking for hands raised. Kit?
Yeah, thank you, Hey, for bringing that up. I did want to say that I know, well, since I just went to the last meeting with Linda Kroll Howell's presentation that 43% of, I think, staff are fully remote right now, but I once again was disappointed by Cornell's reaction to the inclement weather yesterday and in some regard today, but more particularly yesterday. Especially compared to last year. I wasn't on the EA at that time, but I remember peripherally hearing and seeing resolutions being passed about the lack of university response to the inclement weather occurrences that happened. And even if Cornell was to make the decision yesterday that they genuinely did not, or that they wanted to remain open, even just having that, you know, posted on a website or something like that, it just, again, I'm continually disappointed in how the university handles these situations.
Thank you for your feedback. Jessica, your hand is raised. And then Jamie, I see your hand is raised as well. So Jessica first.
Yeah, so I was one of the co-sponsors of the resolution last year. And well, I haven't heard anything from my constituents this time around. And in the email thread, I do feel like the library has proactively said, you know, explain things. But I know that's not the same across campus. But speaking as a co-sponsor of the resolution last year, I was really disappointed that we asked to have a report given to the EA in the fall. And when we sent the resolution to the president, my memory is that she basically said, yes, we agree, this wasn't handled great and we've already done a review. And that was kind of it. And it has been on my mind to ask if there is a way to get, if they did a review, can we get some sort of response? Can someone come tell us what they discovered and what they've changed?
Jessica, you bring up a great point. So I just want to provide a point of clarification for everybody who's new. Last year, February, around the same time, February 6th, 7th, we had a snowstorm and we passed a resolution, sent it to the president, pretty much asking her. so I'll just read the resolution very quickly. quickly. The inclement weather resolution was sent in response to the winter storm. And it basically asked that they keep us informed, provide some clarification in how the decisions are made. And President Pollack provided feedback thanking us for sharing the resolution and indicated that Executive Vice President and CFO Joanne DiStefano and Vice President for Facilities and Campus Services, Rick Burgess, have done a careful review of the storm and response to it. We agree, said this from Martha Pollack, that it is best to avoid late notice to our community when inclement weather occurs, and we strive to provide timely information and notice. We also agree that did not happen in early February, and we are committed to continuing to refine our efforts. So that was the feedback from President Pollack, just so that you all are aware of what had happened just last year. So back to Jamie, who had his hand raised, then Brian, then Kit. Jamie?
So I think it's kind of funny in a way that, like, the way that the fact that the university did not close this week, despite the fact that I think objectively there was more snow during this event than there was at the one last year. But the fact that the university didn't close means that they didn't send out a late notice to us about it not closing, because it didn't close. But the fact that they didn't close when, you know, the roads were as bad as they were yesterday and still are today. And there are a lot of people that are having to go into work. And I don't know if this decision was influenced because this is the move-in week and it's very crucial that they get the students in, but some addressing of that would have been probably helpful as well. And I think that, again, it just feels like these decisions are being made in this vacuum that doesn't seem to factor in all of the stresses that this is putting on all of the staff who are scrambling for childcare or other various needs during a thing where the entire county is shut down except for Cornell.
Thank you, Jamie. So I want to provide time for everybody. It sounds like it was Brian, Kit, Brandon, then Ashley who had raised their hand. So Brian.
Yeah, I thought about this morning as I was driving in, sliding down Forest Home Hill sideways. And, you know, I am an essential employee, so I come to work regardless if I can. But I kept thinking about this. Why isn't the university closing more? I mean, regardless of late notice or not, this was a worse storm to me than the one that they closed on. And I guess I share that sentiment that why wasn't the university closed and what triggers that? And does it have something to do with finances, or does it have more to do with safety? Because everyone's in remote. We don't have to close. I don't want that mentality there. And I'm not sure if that triggered. I'm not saying it does. But I just think that there should have been something out there saying, hey, this is why we're staying open, or this is we decided to close for your safety kind of thing. I just feel like there was a loss there this time. That's all.
Thank you, Brian. Kit?
Yeah, I think, I forget who said it. Maybe it was Jamie. I think it's interesting when we talk about lack of communication or late communication, the university provided, at least in my experience, no university level communication, not even we're watching the storm, we're monitoring this X, Y, and Z. The only thing I received, and I sent this, I think, on the EA listserv, was just my SCO or campus life guidance for pay practices in case of a closure. And I admit that, you know, move-in week as part of, I know that that is a concern being in campus life, student campus life, that move-in week is this week. But at the same time, I mean, how many people or students are really going to be going out of their way to be traveling to Ithaca? The numbers don't compute. And I know that there was kind of, I had gathered that there was an expectation in campus life that non-essential folks who would be essential for move-in would be required to be on campus. And I just didn't see how the demand would necessitate staff to be on campus.
Thank you, Kit. Brandon, Ashley, and then Lisa. So Brandon first.
Thank you, Hey. You know, I think that the decision for closure is really a fairly simplistic formula, in that they look at the snowfall rate per hour, and the grounds crew understand sort of their ability to clear that snow. And so I sit on several meetings where they discuss, you know, the processes, the procedures, when, why, and if they're going to close. And a lot of the conversation really is that simply, can the grounds crew keep up with the snowfall level that they were at? And the forecast and the actual numbers that were within the parameters that the university is able to maintain from a grounds department. You know, I think that doesn't change the fact that I would agree with Kit, and sort of perhaps, you know, while we all can go to emergency.cornell.edu and check that, I don't think it's a standard practice every time to go and do that. So, you know, just an acknowledgement that there is inclement weather coming and we are monitoring the situation might be a piece to give feedback to the Office of Emergency Management in regards to those communications. And that, you know, ultimately, regardless of whether the university closes or stays open, the people who are on campus during this time frame were the same people who would be on campus. You know, the need to get to campus, similar to Brian and my entire dining organization as a whole is there and scrambling to get food out for students. So I think that, you know, they did have to take those factors into consideration, and it's primarily a numbers game. You know, can the grounds crew keep up with it? And I want to put a big shout out for the grounds crew, because they did a tremendous job working through. This is the longest sustained snow I've experienced here at Cornell and in Ithaca, and they did a tremendous job keeping up with that. While the roads weren't perfect and many areas had to lag a bit, I thought they did a tremendous job.
Thank you, Brandon, for providing all that information. It seems like there are a lot of people that want to participate. I see Ashley had her hand up, but I don't see that she has her hand up anymore. It was Ashley, Lisa, Michelle, Podolak, Brian, and then Andrea. So, Ashley?
Yeah, I just wanted to add another quick perspective to something. Also agreeing that whatever the university does, I do agree, just keep us informed. I get that they're keeping us informed on the website, but I'm not saying send me an email every half an hour, but send me an email on what the final decision is, regardless of what it is. I agree with Brandon. I think there's another perspective. There's what can our grounds crew do on campus? I think the other perspective is the rest of the county. I know that Cornell talks to the rest of the county, but if the rest of the county says, yeah, we can get roads plowed, no problem, Cornell has no control over what that actually means. So my parents live on Connecticut Hill in Newfield. They're one of the last roads to get plowed. So on days like today, if my mom was still working at Cornell, she would say, I'm not coming in, I'm gonna work from home, because she knows what the roads are like where she lives. Plowed or not, they're gonna be bad. So someone said, using your best judgment in the chat, I agree, but just bringing the other perspective into the view is Cornell can control how Cornell campus looks. If the county says they can get the roads plowed and it'll be fine, Cornell has no control over what that actually looks like. And, you know, I think people should use their best judgment on deciding to use the roads or not to come into work.
Thank you, Ashley. Lisa?
Thank you, Ashley. That was, yeah, I agree too. But so it's a long-term Cornell person, and, you know, having family longer than I've been here. Cornell has, it's been, they've never closed, you know, back in the day. And then the last few years, they've started to close or delay opening. excuse me, about the grounds crew, last year's storm, you know, we don't have enough grounds crew. I think we can all agree on that. But last year's storm, I finally made it to work. I mean, I barely made it up the hills. I tried four different ways. Finally got to the parking lot, and it was never plowed, never. And I took pictures of it, and it was just ridiculous. And then they closed at noon. This topic just burns my biscuits anyways, because it's just so ridiculous. And as Ashley pointed out, you know, her parents live on Connecticut Hill. Yeah, there's people that live in Pennsylvania. There's people that live in Syracuse. Every county is different. Actually, I think, I don't know if there was an actual state of emergency or not, but the other day, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, there was like 40 some counties that were under something, whatever. Well, I think that Cornell should go by that, but who am I to say? And also today, it really rippled me, because we got an email about the vaccines, they were not opening until 10. So that's funny. You want me to come in to work, but today might've been my vaccine day or whatever, you know, testing day. But you're not opening till 10, but I'm supposed to be at work at 8:30. So yeah, I could go on and on. But that's what I have to say today.
Thank you, Lisa. Thanks for participating. Michelle Podolak.
I just wanted to repeat something I put in the chat, that this for me is really something that's part of that larger discussion about how remote work is working. As a parent and somebody who commutes an hour into Cornell, I need to make that decision the night before. It's hard for me to make the decision at 6 a.m. Because sometimes Cornell has canceled after I'm already commuting. I'm already on my way, but the school hasn't decided whether or not they're in session. But there's something there about the hesitation people are feeling with whether or not they can take off and how you do that. And when the timing of when these decisions get made, that I think it'd be really good to discuss, like, how do we handle that so that people are able to make a good decision and take the time off if they need to.
Thank you, Michelle. Brian, you had your hand raised, but I don't see it raised anymore.
Yeah, go ahead. Let somebody else go.
Okay, so moving on to Andrea.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up the only communication that we got was about the COVID testing sites not being open until 10 this morning. And I had an 8 o'clock appointment to be able to do, because this is my testing day. And it's one of those things that I think it was great. How difficult would it have been if we had people come in to get testing? And it was interesting, we got that late last night, I believe. And so it's one of those things, so it was effective communication in that way, but it is still disappointing that we're not getting as much information, I think, as we would like. And I agree with the statement of, we don't need it every hour on the hour, but just let us know the operating status. And, you know, our grounds crew is working to do, they've got a good handle on things, et cetera, et cetera. But the COVID testing, I think, was a good example of how well it went.
Thank you. Moving on to Kit, then Marin. Kit?
I was going to add, I think based off of what Ashley was saying, I would second that as well. I remember I was trying to find any indication of what was happening yesterday morning. And I remember coming across the emergency preparedness website. And Brandon, I know you talked about this, where essentially all of the questions about all of the FAQs about whether Cornell chooses to close or not, the answers were essentially Cornell makes its own decision. Cornell, it's all what Cornell wants to do. Cornell is its own entity. And I think there is definitely something to be said when Tompkins County was deemed an emergency, a state of emergency county, for Cornell to, again, continue to stay open and not even provide any university level communication about that.
Thank you, Kit. Marin?
Yeah, so I had one sort of additional thought that I sort of wanted to throw out there, and that is that this phrase, you know, use your personal judgment and always take care of your own safety, we all hear that a lot. I know I heard that a lot, but I think it's really important for us to recognize, at least it's something that I try to recognize often, is that that decision is unfortunately never made in a vacuum. And I think all of us here could say that it's never just, oh, can I get my car out the driveway, right? It's, okay, can I get my car out the driveway? Maybe I could, but is my boss not going to accept the fact that I need to work from home today? Maybe I don't have my laptop because somebody told me they were going to be in tomorrow and that I'm expected to be in tomorrow. What if you staff a site that isn't closed, right? So maybe you're not strictly essential, but you know that people are going to come banging on your door, and then you're going to have to sort of justify having to reschedule all that to your supervisor. So I think the real benefit of having Cornell communicate clearly and then close when appropriate is it takes all of that additional input away. The things that make us want to say, well, maybe I'll chance it, and instead allow us to place our safety and our judgment actually first. And so I think it's important that we don't fall down this trap of saying, well, as long as we just let people use their judgment, that it'll be fine, because that judgment is never made in a vacuum, and it's never made without other factors in play with our jobs, because they all have that many factors.
Thank you, Marin. Kit, I see your hand is still raised.
That is an error. I apologize.
Thank you. Is there any other commentary anybody wants to provide? I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of commentary on this issue, and I think it'd be great if maybe one of the committees took it up and maybe talked about ways we can address all the things that we've heard today, because I feel like we've got a lot of commentary and feedback on this, and it seems like maybe more transparency, more communication around it. I'm not really sure what that would look like, but I do welcome each of the committees to maybe perhaps think about that. Lisa, I see your hand is raised.
Yeah, I also, I forgot to mention the fact that last month's delayed opening, just because we're remotely working right now, I feel like even the schools are, even some of the schools are doing it too. They closed schools, but you're still required to remotely school. I think that's a wrong mentality. This virtual working environment, just, I don't know. I just, like my unit last month, I knew everybody was working because I got emails, but you know what? I did not work until noon, because just because we're remote does not, it shouldn't exclude us. It's just, I think that's just unfair. This really gets to my heart. So I would love to have more discussion about this. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa. The time is now 1:27. If there is no other discussion or no additional new business, we can motion to end this meeting early and adjourn now at 1:27. Or if there's something else anybody wants to discuss, we can use the remaining 3 minutes to discuss that. Seeing no feedback, I will make a motion to adjourn early at 1:27. Do I get a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any dissent? Seeing none, the meeting is adjourned at 1:27. I want to thank you all for participating in today's conversation and employee assembly altogether. I really appreciate all your time and effort. So thank you. And I'll see you guys on Friday for the retreat. Take care.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.